Welcome to A Lunch with Biggie, a podcast about small business and creatives sharing their stories and inspiring you. My guest today is a travel-inspired leathersmith creating durable handmade goods that are accessible to all life's adventures, however big or small they may be. Please welcome the one woman behind Wandering Ash Tree, Ashley Potter. What's going on, Ashley? How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. How's your day going?
It's going really well. It's going really well. I really appreciate you taking a lunch break with me. What's your go-to lunch or sandwich?
We have a sandwich at the shop where I work, and it is, it's called the Take It Easy. It is a vegetable sandwich with house-made hummus, sprouts, tomato, avocado, onion. It's like the perfect, nice, crisp vegetable sandwich, and that's what I go to lately.
What's, out of curiosity, what's the bread that you guys use for that?
We use Dave's bread.
Oh, I love that. That's good stuff.
Solid bread. Stuff. Yeah.
Yes. That's my go-to bread at home. So yes, I totally, I'm all about that. And that's over at, the Botanical House. Is that correct? In New Smyrna?
Correct. Yes.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So tell people a little bit about Wandering Ash Tree and how did it start and what made you what inspired the whole thing to start?
The concept behind Wandering Ash Tree is inspired by my travels. I spent a lot of time on the road and I wanted to create durable products that were going to last, things I could carry with me that could hold up to being on planes, trains, automobiles, and just get better the more I use them. So after a trip to the leather markets in Venice, Italy, for me to use and decided to create my own products inspired by those.
I love it. And then one of the main products that you created that you still use is your journal, correct? Is the journal you have.
Yes. I have a terrible anxiety of beautiful leather journals and not being able to write something in them that feels worthy of the leather journal itself. I had these beautiful collections of journals and I was afraid to write in them, which I realize is silly. So I created journals that had reusable inserts. So you can use the outside forever and it gets better the more you use it. And you just change out the middles, which takes that anxiety away.
I have the same anxiety as yours. Like I have, so that's actually one of the reasons. Like your journal is my goal to get to because I have so many journals that I buy mm-hmm. and then I don't want to then I don't know what to write and I have them. And my whole thought was like, okay, let me get comfortable enough to write it so that I actually can do that so that I can mm-hmm. get to your journals now it makes sense. Like the fact that it's reusable, that I can actually just like, oh, well, you know, no big deal. You just like, you know, put another insert in and you start from scratch, which is great. Tell people a little bit about what some other products you also handmade because everything that you do, you pretty much, you either hand cut, you hand stitch everything. So tell people a little bit about some of the other things that you create that if you were to go to the Wandering Ash Tree website, be able to pick up and buy.
My best-selling item and has been for about 5 years now is my slim wallet. Wallets can get pretty large and cumbersome. And I see a lot of, especially older gentlemen that have that wallet that ends up this thick.
The George Costanza wallet.
Yeah, they get that wallet lean in their hips and it's not really good for you. But a lot of the slim wallets that I had been coming across, they had some design flaws that I didn't love. They would stretch out, your cards would start to fall out. So I designed one that circumvented that problem by having a slit system instead of layers of leather. So it can't pull apart at the stitching. And that has been my consistent bestseller since I released it in 2018.
Wow. That's awesome. How long, when did you start? When did Wandering Ash Tree start? Was it 20 with, or at least when did it start? And then when did you decide to take it on the road and actually do all the traveling? Cause that was another one of those things that I've always been amazed by what you do.
So my trip to Europe was in 2015. 2016 was when I started making the journals and a couple different wallet designs and ended up in a few stores. And 2018 was when I went full time. And by 2019, I was on the road. I think I handmade and sold over 1,000 items that year
Wow.
in
Was
five states, over a dozen cities.
that was when you drove like
It's
33,000
a lot.
miles, right? Or something like that.
33,000 miles by
Yeah.
myself in my 2011 Transit.
That I will tell you. So how I met Ashley is I met Ashley, I believe it was the DeLand Indie Market is where I met her. Or it may have been that may have been one of them. At least I know that was a constant where I always got to see you. And that was the one thing. I think if it wasn't there, I may have seen you also at like a East End night market or something like that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that always I was always inspired and I always loved and I was like the fact that like was that you're like you were like I'm go I have like I work and live in my transit. I build and I assemble and I'm like and I'm touring everywhere. And I the hustle itself was just something that I've always admired. And then just like how, you know, and that's one of those things where I always like that's why I always wanted to come by and say hi and see how you were doing and checking in on you, just because I was like, I'm like, man, I'm like, I could only imagine like the one, the loneliness and all the different things that kind of come with the fact of you traveling by yourself. And so the mere fact that you were like doing this is something that you loved and were doing it and we're traveling everywhere. I just think is truly amazing. You know, and like and what you've created and the quality of product that you made. So like when you're traveling, where are you actually making all these products? Like, you know, all these like hand stitching and doing and cutting and doing all these things when you were traveling so much.
So I had a fold down table that I had built into my van. I had a big block of wood, and then I would work on park benches in the van. If I were traveling and found camping sites, I would work on picnic tables there. And I did a lot of prep work where I could cut and hole punch. Because when you're hand stitching leather, you have to hammer out each of the holes for the stitching. So two-step process. So I would do a lot of prep and try to get as much cut and hole punched as possible. And then I could sew in coffee shops, or you've seen me making products at the market. And I do that as well. I set up a little work table behind my tent, and I would hammer and sew pretty much constantly that year.
Wow,
Everywhere.
that's insane.
Everywhere.
That and then were you was it one of those as you were traveling, were you finding like spots where you're like, okay, I know I'm gonna be because I think you have family in St. Louis, I believe was one of the areas.
Yes.
So we're like, were you finding home spots where you're like, okay, I gotta bring in leather, like or order leather. I'm like, I'm going in during one of my destinations plan ahead to be able to pick up product to be able to then start creating.
Yeah, and for a lot of that year, I had my home base split between Florida and St. Louis. So I had many leather stocks in both of those places.
Yeah.
So I could bring the hides that I needed for whatever trip I was going on. And I did a lot of home for the week and then, travel to St. Pete a few hours away and then come back and then the next day go out to Miami or something crazy. And then during the summers, I would spend about, a month or a month and a half on the road fully at a time.
Wow. That's insane. And obviously no bathroom. So obviously you're doing campgrounds and things like that in order to kind of, you know, how to the day to day, like that's that alone must like, how did you, what did you do to kind of like the unwind the de-stress when it came to stuff like that, when you're traveling by yourself and doing all those things? 'Cause you, after a while, like you just kind of like, I don't want to be in my car anymore.
Well, I definitely joked that year that I lived full time in Walmart parking lots. This was pre-pandemic, so those 24-hour Walmarts were just, that was where I spent most of my nights and could do the bathroom trips and whatever. But coffee is always the link. That was kind of my home base wherever I went. I would find coffee shops and I became regulars at coffee shops in multiple cities. I would come through every few weeks or even every few months, and the baristas would know who I was and my name. And I just kind of became so integrated with being on the road that it was kind of like I lived everywhere and nowhere at the same time that year.
Wow.
But coffee shops, I feel like, were my real, like, link to stability.
No, that makes sense. And you used to work at coffee shops, But before, so obviously there's like, and you can't go wrong with just going to local coffee shops. I love going to, anytime I can, go to a local coffee shop. And then obviously, like, after pandemic and all that stuff, now you're more Florida based. And the one of the great things is, like, I know you're like lead barista over at the Botanical House. And then you're also taking classes. So, like, how are you balancing all of this now? Like, work, the business, and also, we'll talk about a little bit about health, but like also as well as also about school. Like, how are you balancing all of these things on a day to day?
It is difficult, and last semester I definitely bit off more than I could comfortably chew. So I'm learning that balance as I go, but a lot of it I try to integrate together. The leather work is not full time anymore. I do that part time. Which allows me more flexibility to do my schoolwork at home. I'm taking classes online, so that helps a lot. And then for my studies, I'm studying anthropology and I'm integrating the coffee into that. So a lot of my focus is coffee from an anthropological perspective,
Oh, wow.
which allows me to tie in with the barista work. For example, I'm giving a talk on the 25th in Orlando about the history of coffee culture, so how it links throughout the entire history of coffee from an anthropological standpoint. So I'm combining those two together.
Wow. That's awesome. That's very
It's
cool.
pretty cool. I'm having fun with
Yeah.
it.
And I think that's the key, right? That is definitely the key when you're doing these things, especially if you're working, like, it's pretty much like, that's most of like your feed. When I watch your feed, it's like, I'm either doing coffee, you're doing, I've seen some coffee culture stuff, and kind of doing like competitions, which I think is amazing to kind of see. And then at the same time, some leather work. So I think that's one of the reasons why I kind of loved, I wanted to have you on. 'Cause I just think that, you're, not to mention occasionally you grace us with your presence of your voice and your singing. So you're definitely a creative that's kind of just, finding a way to make, kind of use all your skills and all your attributes and try to get in, and bring them out to the world.
I have a very hard time doing just one thing.
Is it because you get bored, or is it because of the fact that you just kind of like, that's how your mind goes, that you're just like, I just like, you just kind of want to put your hands on all different things? Because I'm kind of that way.
It's definitely the latter. There's just a lot of things that I'm interested in, and a lot of things that I'm lucky enough to be good at doing, as long as I cultivate that. And as long as I can do them, I want to. So if I can find ways to connect them together and, combine the interests and joys of mine, then I really like to jump into all of that
No,
with both feet.
I love that. What as a coffee person, what is your, we'll go a few coffee questions. One is, what's your go-to coffee order?
That is a little bit location dependent.
Okay.
At home, I usually do just a good drip coffee or pour over. Keep it classic. If I am going to a new shop, I like a cortado. It's equal parts espresso and steamed milk. And that's a really good way to gauge quality of a shop. If you're trying out different places and you have that consistency where you're ordering the same drink at different places, then it really gives you a good gauge of the shop as a whole. And then if I'm at my shop, we make our own syrups, which I also do. So it's another way to be creative, but I really like to play around with the flavors on that and have a flavored latte on, whatever flavors I'm coming up with at that point.
Nice. So as a barista, what is like the one, is there like a particular order or a certain pet peeve that you and maybe your colleagues, fellow baristas have when people order coffee, since you are constantly dealing with coffee orders?
Pet peeves as far as customer orders.
Yeah.
When they ask for their drinks extra hot, you can only make milk so hot. And
Or it
sometimes
curdles,
people
right? It'll
just,
curdle, won't it, if you make it too, if it goes so hot?
it blows the milk out. Like you
Yeah.
just, there's a molecular change that happens when you heat milk,
Yeah.
whether it's dairy or non-dairy. And it can only be so hot before it just gets weird.
That's interesting. I could see people saying I want extra hot coffee or make the coffee hot, but there's only so much like that, and that's also a thing when you're brewing though. Isn't there like a certain there is a science, chemical balance, molecular balance of when you're doing coffee, of how it kind of goes when you, and out of curiosity, when you do drip coffee, I meant to ask this, does that mean like just straight black drip coffee? Okay, that's what I figured. I figured you would not be like me that is like, oh, I put a little oat milk in mine or whatever. Like you want it like straight so you can appreciate it.
You know what? Coffee snobbery, though, has no place in my life. This right here has vanilla creamer in it.
There you go. No, I'm all about it. I'm the same way with sandwich stuff, so I get it. I totally get it. Like I'm not judging you how you eat your sandwich and how you want it. You just enjoy. In my world, you just like that's like it. Like you just enjoy a coffee, however you want to enjoy it. Make sure you enjoy it. So I know I totally get that. No, that's
Yeah,
awesome.
one thing I tell staff, especially during training process, the best coffee is the coffee that you like. So I have no interest in alienating any of the customers or other people. There's no snobbery. There is different levels of coffee from a craft standpoint. And then there's also just what you enjoy at that moment. And those do not have to be mutually exclusive.
Yeah, no, I totally get that, and I appreciate that. Considering, I am not a coffee. I will say that I'm more of a medium. I light to medium roast coffee person. And we've now dabbled more in my world. Not you like actually buying from roasters, local roasters, from the area and stuff like that. So just because we notice the difference, that and also water is the difference as well.
Water
Yeah.
is a huge thing. So
Yeah.
many times people ask, you know, why do I make the same coffee at home and it doesn't taste the same? It's water.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the one thing I learned from one of my previous guests from Otis, Glenn from Otis Coffee. He
Oh,
uh
yeah.
that was one of the things that he said, and I was like, man, this is what a game changer that is.
It makes a huge difference.
For sure. There's something also that obviously we don't have to massive talk about it. You also deal with a dysautonomia. Can you share a little bit about how that affects? Because even when you and you're very and what I appreciate and truly value is the fact that you're open enough to share a lot of these things, like especially like when you like things like, hey, I was like playing when I was playing the guitar, my fingers would get stuck and certain things like that. Like I just kind of want to share because I think that shows an extra, there's just something. That's something you deal with. That's something that I know that like you've actually, which I think is great because I know like a while back you were able to do like a crowdfund and be able to get some additional machinery and stuff like that to kind of help a little bit with your leather work and stuff like that. So I just think that like what, that's just like an extra layer of, it's hard enough being, and obviously you know this, like a female leather smith, a female run business, all these different things. And then to have an extra layer, which is like of dysautonomia, which there's so much unknown with it still, in the medical world that, so I figure if you can kind of tell people a little bit about that and then just kind of how you handle and affect that, and deal with that on a daily basis.
That is a huge part of my life and a part that I'm very vocal about. If anybody follows me on social media, you will see a lot of just how that affects my daily life because it does affect everything. Dysautonomia is a dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system, and that is where all of your body's regulatory functions lie. So everything from heart rate, blood pressure, eye dilation, everything. It just doesn't work right in me. I can be fine 1 second and then my heart rate's 150 while on, medication. So it's very, very unregulated, which is unfortunate. And that affects a lot of how I do my leather work. As you mentioned with the crowdfunding, I had someone help me put that together because my fingers all dislocate and I do all of my leather good entirely by hand. So that is honestly, it's very difficult. But I've had people help me get a sewing machine, which I'm still learning how to use. I am using it. But it's a very different skill set. And so I'm just trying to find ways to adjust the way that I work with leather. And I share that as much as I can, because there are people that also deal with these issues that don't necessarily know how to navigate doing something like learning leather work when your hands don't work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, finding ways to create my own machinery. I've done that as well. I modified a 1-ton arbor press and figured out ways to help with the hole punching because I couldn't hammer. I could hammer, but I couldn't let go of the hammer.
Yeah.
A lot of my tools look like Fisher-Price tools because I've had to wrap the handles in foam so I can hold on to it like this instead of, you know,
yeah,
tighter. And then in terms of daily life with that, it is one of the reasons that I went full-time with my business. I had been working in coffee and I was having issues standing, and that's a very important part of working behind a counter. Passing out with 200 degree water is no fun. And so it went from a hobby to a job very quickly. And luckily I have the disposition where I said, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to do this full time now. And I made that work. But there is a lot of pivoting every year, new pivoting.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say the amazing. So like, and this is, once again, these are the reasons, by the way, that I wanted to have you on. And one of the reasons why I admire you, because like we pivot enough as it is as a small business, but you're also dealing with certain extra things that have to, you know, other pivots of how am I going to pivot to do this and do that. And like, which adds another layer. So it's like, it's hard enough as it is to be a small business, but the fact that you're doing all these other things and trying to figure out other pivots, that's very admirable. But at the same time, like, it's just because that you're a badass and you find a way to do it. So I get that. And I appreciate that. Especially with like, you know, when you see other people kind of also struggling or trying to figure out ways of, within this autonomy. And I know because my daughter's got pots. And so like, I've actually, you were one of the first people I reached out to ask questions and things like that, because she deals with that, not to your level yet, but I mean, it's one of those where we kind of keep it under control. And that's kind of one of those things where it's like, that is kind of how it is. You can't, it's never something that you can just be like, oh yeah, I don't have it anymore. Like, no, it's you deal with it forever.
No, it's forever. Yeah. And I really want to make sure that I am an open resource to people, you know, that they can come to me with questions, or they can say, you know, I want to be able to do these things. How is it that I can do that safely? And that's one of the reasons that I am as vocal about it as I am. Because it's important, you know?
Definitely.
It's very, very difficult to be disabled in this country. And it's hard to be a small business owner. And then when you combine those together.
Yeah. Amen. And also female. A female run business.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can't even imagine. I saw some of your social. You're so like, yes, I know. I'm a female leathersmith. Yes, I know. And I chuckled because I was like, I can't. That's got to get old, freaking old as hell. Like, oh, I don't see that often. And it's true, you don't see them that often. But still, like, you would, if anything, you would be like, hey, this is like amazing. You know, amazing craftsmanship. Mm-hmm. You know, and be able to enjoy it.
I have an unfortunate number of men who have said things like, oh, it's nice that your boyfriend lets you sell his stuff. No, it's mine.
Wow.
Or they will get all the way to handing me money for a wallet or a journal, which is unisex, and then go, oh, wait, is this for men? Yeah.
Wow.
It's for whoever.
Yeah.
So that's something I didn't really realize was going to be as prevalent as it was. I don't know why leather and being a woman is so so hard for some people to grasp.
Yeah. That's insane and very obviously very small mindedness on their part. For sure. What
silly.
For sure. What, out of curiosity, since you're doing so many different things and you're constantly active and nonstop, when you're not doing school, not working and all that, what do you do for fun? Like, what's your recharge?
Are we supposed to recharge?
Well, you would hope so. You would hope so. I know one hobby you have that you love, but I'm kind of curious, like if there's other things that you do, when you're not working or not thinking about work or things like that.
I'm an avid reader. I spend a lot of my rest time because it, unfortunately, a lot of my like fun outside of work does have to be restorative, because I only have so much physical energy that I can output. So I read a lot of books, usually 50 or more a year.
Wow.
I don't know how or when, but those numbers do happen.
That's insane, 'cause that's like one a week, or pretty much like
It
one a week. I don't know how, like, yeah, like that's intense. But no, I mean, I that makes total sense. Out of curiosity, what kind of genre of books are do you read? And how much of that leads to you reading about anthropology or about coffee? What is it usually the genre that you're usually reading?
Anthropology and coffee is definitely part of it, but when it comes to the just reading for fun, I just really enjoy mystery novels.
Okay.
There's something fun about trying to figure it out as you go along. And I have a soft spot for cheesy, cozy mystery novels. You know,
Okay.
the ones that Hallmark makes movies based off
Yeah, yeah,
of.
yeah, yeah.
I love me some mysteries set in some small town in Maine where somebody runs a cupcake factory and like solves crimes on the
No, those are I love
side.
those. That's like a road trip game for us sometimes. We'll make up like a what would be a crazy Hallmark movie and that's usually kind of how we would do it.
I love
Like,
it.
yeah, it's definitely a fun thing to be able to do. Kind of want to get a little bit, since you did so many events in so many different places, I got a few more questions for you. One of them is, what are some tips and advice you would give for folks, like, because of the fact that you've gone all around the country in different states, like, is there any tips that when you're selling out in the public that you think that, like, hey, these are some things that are very beneficial for a vendor, or someone selling that they should kind of have in mind, when they're selling to customers out in a market setting?
I think especially when you're in markets and you're doing a fair number of markets, really just getting a solid setup is very helpful. And it doesn't have to be completely stagnant. Like my booth changes a little bit every time, but being comfortable having something that can be modular, but also easy to pack up, easy to put out, that has been very, very helpful, especially if you're dealing with any sort of health difficulties. That's helpful. And then, other than that, just be really genuine. One of the best things about markets is being able to be face to face with your customers. I can sell online and that's fine, but when people are buying your small business products, they're not just buying the product that you're making. They're buying, a part of your life and your personality. And it's very important to customers, I think, more so than maybe they realize, to have that face to go with, what a person made. If I'm at a market and somebody looks at my products and they're like, "Oh, that's really nice," and then they find out I made it, you can see a shift in them. They want to ask about it. They want to know why you made it, how you made it. And I think that's a really, really special thing that comes from small businesses and especially market settings.
No, I think that's so accurate and so true. That's so good. What advice would you give someone first wanting to start something?
Don't be afraid to not be perfect at the beginning. You're going to learn along the way. And I think when starting something, it's very easy to say, I want to do this, but I'm not ready for this part, or I don't have this, and XYZ isn't set up yet. Just start doing it. Start doing it, start documenting it, whether it's for yourself or public consumption. And you're going to progress and you're going to find out what works and what doesn't. So, as simple as it sounds, the best advice I have for starting is to just start.
Yeah. No, I think that's so true. I always keep telling my I keep reminding myself a lot of times as well, like, progress over perfection. Like, it's never going to be perfect. When you
Absolutely.
and if you go and you look from where you started now to where it is, like, I'm pretty sure for you especially, like, things that you created in 2018, how you created things to how you're creating things and the craftsmanship that you did now in 2024, is got to be like, you know, there's got to be like a massive, like, I don't know if you ever look at some things that you maybe you've kept from like original pieces that you've created to what you're creating now and seeing the difference and the evolution of the work that you've created.
Yeah, and that is kind of a twofold thing. On one hand, you get to see that progress that you've made, but then it's also really cool that I've been using the same bag for 6 years now, and my new bags might be slightly better, but I've been using that bag for 6 years, and that's cool.
Yeah.
And it's not at all close to giving out, you know?
No, I absolutely love that. I think it's awesome. Tell people where, how they can follow you, how they can check out and maybe do some buying at Wandering Ash Tree, maybe come see you, maybe see you for coffee or maybe even go to one of the coffee events. You know, tell people a little bit about that.
I do have a lot of ideas and setups for this year. I used to teach classes and I plan on starting those again, probably starting hosted at my coffee shop, which is the Botanical House in New Smyrna Beach. My Instagram is at Wandering Ash Tree, and that is the best place to get information, updates. You'll be able to see when those classes happen and when the website gets restocked, things like that. WanderingAshTree.com is the website. I've managed to get everything. It's just Wandering Ash Tree.
Yeah.
WanderingAshTree.com, Wandering Ash Tree on Instagram. And that's hard.
Yeah.
That is hard as a small business.
Heck yeah.
No added numbers. So it's all simplified, which is
No,
great.
I love that. Out of curiosity, like the knit hats that you have, are those, do you make those
Oh,
as
yeah.
well?
I do. I also started making leather scented candles.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So for the knitting though,
Yeah.
this is an example of how I've made things more accessible for myself. I used to crochet and I still crochet. I don't crochet to sell anymore because it takes me too long and it's too painful at this point. So a friend of mine introduced me to a knitting machine, which is cool because it takes the strain off of my hands,
Yeah.
but there's still a lot of skill involved, and I can still do really cool combinations and designs. I made a whole sweater on a circular knitting machine.
Holy moly.
So it's really cool because I get to do all of that same stuff and it's really high quality, but it's more brain and less fingers.
No, I totally get that. That's amazing. Ashley, thank you so much for coming on. I really do appreciate it. That's our show for today. Thank you to so much to Ashley Potter of Wandering Ash Tree to being on. Definitely check out her Instagram. Also, if you like coffee and you're in the New Smyrna Beach area, definitely make sure to go visit her. It's on my list to do because I do enjoy a good cup of coffee, and I love New Smyrna Beach, so it kind of works out perfect. If you enjoyed the show, definitely make sure to subscribe. If you want to support me, check out my brand, Deli Fresh Threads. You know, and definitely tell your friends. But thank you until next time. Keep eating sandwiches and follow your passion. Thanks, everyone.